ecstasy was supposed to be the next big drug, but this month the FDA said nope. MDMA-assisted therapy for PTSD faced a major rejection. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. What concerns did the FDA have with the clinical trials for MDMA? And what about the allegations of unethical conduct associated with the therapy? We'll discuss the decision and dive into the therapy with my guest, University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry, Dr. Stephen Rush. Thanks for being here, Dr. Rush.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Dr. Rush, there was a lot of anticipation about this. The FDA decided, though, this month not to approve MDMA-assisted therapy for PTSD. Walk us through the decision.
Well, so what we know about the decision is a little bit limited. The FDA is not legally allowed to release their concerns until the company who had applied for drug approval, in this case, a company called Lykos, publishes the denial letter themselves. And to my knowledge, to date, we haven't seen that letter. But we do know because of investigations by independent organizations that there are a number of concerns about the trials that were done specifically by this company, Lykos, that related to invalidating data based on bias, inconsistencies between the therapeutic treatments, the outcome measures they used, and then there are safety concerns that occurred within this study, but that's also in the broader context of safety concerns that have been existent within the psychedelic healing community for decades.
You mentioned bias. How difficult is it to have a truly blind trial when the drug is a psychedelic? I mean, don't patients figure out pretty quickly if they're getting the drug or a placebo?
Well, yeah, that was one of the things that the Institute for Clinical and Economic Review, who was asked by the New England Comparative Effectiveness Public Advisory Council to review these studies, highlighted. And what they pointed out as the main issue, and is likely the FDA's main issue with this application, is that the studies were insufficiently blinded. Typically, we want to have research studies that are double blind, which means that neither the scientist or researcher performing the treatment nor the patient knows if they are receiving the drug that's being requested for approval or the placebo. Right. There were a couple issues in these studies. One, the participants in the trial, which included patients and scientists and the therapists running the trial, were already members of a community that had strong prior beliefs about the value of psychedelic drugs in the treatment of psychiatric illness. That can turn into bias when it creates a significant pressure for the results of these trials to be favorable. And in fact, some participants reported that they were told specifically that any negative results could slow the progress on a treatment that is unquestionably beneficial and needed.
Unquestionably, that's a pretty strong word.
Yes. Yeah. So when you have people who come in with a strong belief about the importance of a proposed treatment, it takes away the ability to be objective, right? And so there is some bias that's going to creep in or potentially creep in there. And that's the concern, that this may have creeped into the outcomes. But the other issue, as you mentioned, is MDMA has very noticeable effects, right? And in this in these FDA trial studies, the drug company Lykos chose not to use a placebo drug that would have had some sort of effect that maybe could have been mistaken for the MDMA, right? So giving a dose of a drug like Ativan, a benzodiazepine, that makes you feel a little calm, maybe even a little inebriated, takes away some of the difference between getting MDMA and getting a sugar pill. 40% of the patients in the study had already had experience with MDMA, and so they already understood what the effects of the drug were and likely knew right away if they were receiving the placebo of that drug.
So what was the placebo used in these tests? Was it just kind of a sugar pill, what so many of us think of as a placebo?
It did not have any effect, a sugar pill for all practical purposes, though the FDA had suggested, as other psychedelic research has done, psilocybin most recently, to use a compound that produces some sufficient psychoactive effect as the comparator and not just a nothing pill.
What do you think about the FDA's decision?
You know, I'm kind of torn. I think psychedelics are a very exciting area of research in psychiatry, and some of the preliminary evidence fires and fuels that excitement within me. Right now, I think this looks like an issue with the company rather than with the potential for MDMA to have a positive effect on PTSD. The concerns about the validity of the studies are specific to the studies that were performed by this company, and it questions their methodology, but also questions the ethics of their intervention, what they called the therapy component.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. We're talking about MDMA-assisted therapy and the local implications of the FDA's recent decision not to approve the therapy for PTSD. Do you have questions or comments about MDMA-assisted therapy? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. I do want to talk about the therapy component of this whole system, but I guess I'm wondering first, what, if any, impact do you think this decision will have on the future of psychedelic medicine applications? You just talked about how promising so many people think they are. Could this really put a damper on some of that?
I think there's a lot of concern within the community of people who are particularly passionate about psychedelics and their therapeutic use in psychiatry. I don't believe that this rejection has ruined the potential role for MDMA in medicine, as those with who are more passionate about it are heard to be said. Again, this was not a ruling that made any statement about the efficacy of MDMA, but rather that they couldn't truly evaluate the efficacy of MDMA because of all of the problems with this study. I think we're learning about how we perform studies on substances that have psychedelic effects and maybe treatments that include a therapy component, which isn't something that the FDA often evaluates, nor can they approve or reject. And so I think this rejection is important in the sense that we're seeing some of the things that we should not be doing in research and seeing some of the weaknesses that we need to shore up so that the studies that are done are valid.
Well, talking about some of the things that potentially researchers should not be doing, our listeners may be familiar as a party drug. MDMA is known as ecstasy or Molly, and one of the effects it can have is to cause sexual arousal. Let's talk about some of the concerns that have been raised about the psychotherapy component of this treatment when it's paired with MDMA.
Yeah, so this is a really difficult area of discussion for a lot of people because the guidelines around relationships between therapists and patients or clients isn't as black and white as we might think it is. So the therapy used in this MDMA-assisted therapy was not something that's already been proven to be effective for PTSD, like cognitive behavioral therapy, cognitive processing therapy, exposure response prevention, but was a creation of their own. Lykos, the company applying for the drug, is actually an arm of this group called the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, or MAPS, which was founded in the 80s. And this is a group of people who are scientists, psychologists, who have been interested in this research for decades before we've been talking about it now, and developed their own kind of treatment, this therapy, which was the therapy assist part of this treatment. We don't know if that therapy is better than what already exists in terms of therapeutic approaches to PTSD. It may have been better, for example, for the company to compare their specific therapy assisted with MDMA with a therapy that we already know works for PTSD, right? That would be a fair comparison to tell us on the level of just the therapy, is this effective? Is it more effective than what we're already doing? And this is done in other trials of psychedelics, psilocybin trials recently, compared their drug and therapy to a therapy component that's known to be effective in depression and medications that are known to be effective in medication.
One of the things that I read about in preparation for this was this nurturing touch component of some of this therapy. Can you explain what nurturing touch is and some of the concerns that have been raised about that?
I can try. Actually, having looked on the MAPS website, I can say that they define nurturing touch to include placing a hand on the shoulder of a client or holding their hand. That's kind of the most specific definition that they give. Unfortunately, during one of the phase two trials for the MDMA assisted therapy, the nature of that and the use of that nurturing touch changed and began to include things such as cuddling, right? So we are aware of allegations of sexual assault by one of the therapists, the allegations by a patient of one of the therapists involved in the study. And what had occurred is that all of these sessions had been recorded, but they had not been viewed until 6 months later. And none of the inappropriate sexual behavior on the side of that therapist was reported to the FDA, right? And so then this woman very bravely came out and disclosed that this had happened and sent the video to media outlets and sent information to the people who could help give her a voice, right? Because this idea of nurturing touch can very easily go bad when you as a therapist are working with somebody under the influence of a drug that makes you more suggestible and makes you more open to social relationships, right? And easily able to misconstrue the nature of physical contact.
Well, and even the question of consent gets kind of blurry under those circumstances, right? I mean, in the reports that I read, that therapist who was accused said that he had a consensual relationship with this patient or this person undergoing the therapy, but how much can you consent when you're under the influence of this drug? Is that a big question here?
I don't think it's a question at all. The answer is actually, the easiest answer is actually not related to the presence of the drug at all. In this specific example, the power dynamic between any therapist and any patient is such that there is no ability for consensual sex to occur. And those are the guidelines that are set forth by the American Psychological Association and the American Psychiatric Association. It is never okay to have sexual contact with a patient. Patients cannot consent because of the position of authority that a therapist can take on in somebody's life. In some places, that's illegal. In California, what that man had done would be illegal. It is deemed unethical by the American Psychological Association. But there's a question of what levels of consent would be required for even touch, right? Because in an individual patient, a certain kind of touch can trigger something very dramatic, especially when we're talking about PTSD. And it does not seem that the consent to be touched in these studies was as thorough as it should have been. And even broader, the problems with consent in this study were that some of the participants came forward after the fact to disclose some of the very negative outcomes that they had experienced that were not included in the consent process. Mm-hmm. So, for example, some in the trial felt that after the trial was over, that their work on trauma was in a completely unfinished state and that they were in an emotionally unstable place, worse off than when they had started the therapy. The risk for that to occur, because this was a trial and would end abruptly, should have been something discussed so that the patient could have consented to that.
We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll discuss whether Ozempic is changing the food and beverage industry. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about MDMA-assisted therapy and the local implications of the FDA's recent decision not to approve the therapy for PTSD. My guest is University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry, Dr. Stephen Rush. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing talk at wvxu.org. Dr. Rush, we were talking about some of the things that went wrong in these trials, some of the inappropriate behavior that's been reported. But talk a little bit more about what potential you think MDMA could have. It seems like as you mentioned, the FDA didn't make a ruling on, hey, this doesn't work for anybody. It seems to be more of a decision based on how the clinical trials were conducted. What kind of benefits and potential benefits do you think this drug could have for people?
These are things that we are at the earliest stages of understanding. Ketamine has been around and is typically referred to as a psychedelic, although not technically so, for some number of years now. A lot of studies are being done on psilocybin. A lot of studies continue to be done on MDMA. It is possible that these substances can change the landscape of psychiatry. Many of these synthetic substances were actually created by people whose intention was to use them for a therapeutic purpose. And so this has always been the nature of MDMA, for example. Unfortunately, it gained popularity as an illicit substance, which takes away from the work that had been being done to look at it as a therapeutic treatment. But the therapeutic treatment has continued underground. And I think that is the case because there's probably some evidence of efficacy. The problem is we just don't know, right? So to predict the future of MDMA in medicine is very difficult because those decisions need to be based on the evidence that is presented in trials and that is unbiased. And without any such evidence, it is a complete unknown.
What do you think this FDA decision could mean for local research, for local patients who maybe were hoping for another option for treating PTSD? PTSD is such an awful thing to live with.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any question that this therapy may be effective. There were a lot of people in these trials who have spoken out for the drug company Lykos because this has changed their life so significantly. There are veterans organizations who have spoken out about the FDA's rejection because they so strongly believe that this would be an effective tool to help them have a better quality of life. I think that it hasn't ruined the potential for this to be true. Again, the FDA's ruling was not a statement that MDMA was ineffective as a treatment, but rather that the data submitted for these trials were insufficient to approve that MDMA-assisted therapy as done in the trials is an effective and safe treatment.
And again, that the clinical trials also included not only the drug, but also the psychotherapy part of it. We talked a little bit about this type of psychotherapy that this organization was advocating for, but I understand some researchers involved in this work, they used all kinds of different kinds of psychotherapy. I mean, it wasn't even a common type of psychotherapy that everybody was using. Could that have been tricky too, if not everyone's doing the same thing with these patients?
Yes, and that was one of the top issues raised by ICER, the Institute for Clinical and Economic Review, when they had done their report on this, that the therapy was not sufficiently standardized such that there were significant differences in the therapy getting done at this clinical site versus with another clinical site.
Hmm. We talked about bias a little bit before, and I understand you, and you kind of mentioned this, that some of the researchers who were involved in this work were encouraged to take MDMA to kind of better understand what their patients were experiencing. Do you think that could also have an impact on impartiality and outcomes?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially if it's an experience that those researchers walked away with feeling they had benefited. The issue with anybody knowing that MDMA is active, whether the patient is aware of it because they've taken it or the clinician is aware of it because they see that clearly someone is having the psychoactive effects of MDMA, creates bias. Because if you know your patient is getting MDMA, you may be more enthusiastic in terms of the work that you're doing with them. If you've already tried the substance and you think you know what to anticipate, you may project some of that anticipation onto the patient who you now know is taking the active MDMA compound. And so there really isn't any objectivity in that situation.
Hmm. We talked about some of the unethical and, awful behavior that one patient reported about a therapist with this therapy that she underwent. And my understanding is the person that she accused was not a medical provider. But so I guess I'm wondering if the psychotherapy component isn't regulated by the FDA, if there are documented cases of unlicensed therapists involved in the work, what do you think should be done to protect patients?
It's a very good question, and I've put some thought into it. Clearly, there should be some sort of regulation about what is required to engage in these types of treatments where it is more easy for boundary violations to occur because of the nature of the psychoactive drug. I think that probably means a program that confirms that everybody involved in a treatment is certified by the certification body that they're stating they have a degree from. So if it were me, that they confirm with the Ohio State Medical Board that I indeed have my license to practice medicine in Ohio. I think studies like this are going to need, and even the practice of psychedelic medicine in this form is going to require a lot of education to the public about what is considered ethical and appropriate behavior in both a medical setting and the therapeutic setting, and what is not only unethical, but what is illegal. People need to have information. Information is the power here. Information is what allows them to consent to treatment. And so the informed consent process also needs to discuss in detail the unknowns of these treatments, but what we have learned about how things can go wrong.
So do you think MDMA therapy still has a future for practitioners and for patients? Do you think ultimately people will be able to find a way to practice this effectively and safely?
I think if someone approaches the FDA with a trial that doesn't contain the validity issues and the ethical issues that existed here, it would be a very different story. We would be talking about a very different story today.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry, Dr. Stephen Rush. Thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Rush. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too. Up next, what kind of impact is Ozempic having on the food and beverage industry? We'll talk about it. This is Cincinnati Edition.